All right. Thanks for your patience, everyone. Sorry for the delay. We had a little bit of an AV issue, and I need to make sure my demo environment's working because we had to reboot the computer. But welcome to the session on archiving and compliance for the new Exchange. My name's Steve Chu. I'm a senior technical product manager on the Exchange team in Redmond for Microsoft. And I'm here to talk about the new archiving compliance capabilities in Exchange Server 2013, as well as what we're calling the new Exchange, which is obviously not assigning a version to what we're going to provide in the cloud. But when I refer to Exchange 2013 in this session, I will be referring to both what we have on premises as well as online. I see some familiar faces. A few of you might have been to my DLP session yesterday. Thank you very much for coming back. A lot of new faces as well. Thanks for taking time on Friday late in the conference to come to this session. Hopefully I'll be able to introduce some new insights to you about what we're trying to do with Exchange in the next release. And feel free to jump in with questions. I prefer questions at the end because that way we can repeat the questions and make sure they get recorded correctly. But if you have a burning question, feel free to jump in throughout the presentation as well. Okay. All right, without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. Got a lot of content to cover. So how many of you are using Exchange 2010 right now? Raise your hand. Okay, good, most of you. Okay, so there's a little bit of this, which is reviewing what we have in 2010. For those of you who have 2010, just bear with me. I'll try to go through it pretty quickly. It seems like most of the folks in the room understand what we have available in 2010. But it is important to understand 2010 because that's really our first big step into the archiving and compliance space. Certainly we had MRM in 2007, but 2010 was really that sort of, stake in the ground by Exchange saying, hey, we're going to go into this industry, we're going to provide a lot of value to our customers. We're not going to necessarily cover every scenario. Certainly there's a lot of industries that have very specific regulations and compliance scenarios that partners are certainly better equipped to support. But I'd say that the majority of organizations should benefit greatly from our archiving offering. And in 2013, we actually take that a big step further. We really build upon what we had in 2010. Not just in terms of case management capabilities, which we've added a ton of more granular types of query-based controls. But beyond that, we offer federation. Now you have one place to do your legal hold and e-discovery for Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. So I'll talk about all this, but just to sort of give you a sense of what we're going to cover today, those are really the big new bets in 2013. Now, these rocks, archiving innovation, form the backbone of what we have in archiving in 2010, and it also does in 2013. So don't make any mistake. We are still this is a journey, and we're going to maintain consistency in terms of the priorities and then what we're trying to invest in terms of building a full compliance solution for our customers. But in terms of these particular rocks, the first user at admin experience, I want to highlight this because this is the one area where Exchange does have a competitive advantage. We own the email experience, and as a result, we can provide a seamless user experience in terms of how they manage their primary and archive data, right, without having to provide stubbing or provide a different interface by which end users have to learn in order to access their archive data. With us, because we have complete integration with Outlook and OWA, we can provide that that experience to end users right there in the same way that they do with their primary mailbox. And that's big because that just cuts down on the cost and the time required to educate end users on how to access their archive data. In addition, the admin experience is just much more manageable, right? You don't have multiple interfaces and multiple authentication scenarios to deal with. You have one interface where you can manage all of your archiving compliance needs, in addition to DLP and anti-spam, anti-malware, and any of these other capabilities that you need to manage through Exchange. In terms of immutability, this is a question we get a lot because in the past few years, the archiving industry, especially third-party archiving vendors, have sort of created a paradigm by which people archive, right? Move your data out of Exchange or SharePoint into a third-party store, and then we give you compliance tools on top of that data for you to be able to place holds, run e-discovery, export to reporting and things like that. And that's fine. That's worked for a long time. But we felt that there were some inefficiencies to that process, right? Exchange data lives best in Exchange, And SharePoint data lives best in SharePoint. That's the simple fact. I think everyone would agree, because that's where those stores were built for. But you know, we have to provide the tools to allow our customers to be able to access that data, to manage that data from one place without having to move it out, right? And that's something that we provided only a half story of in 2010, as all of you are aware. And in 2013, we really complete that circle. Okay. Now, in terms of immutability, you know, what we like to say is immutability is baked in the deepest layer of the Exchange store. Okay. It's software-based immutability. And we understand that, you know, for some customers, it's not always easy to conceptualize that, right? Because we're so used to worm storage, write once, read many, put it on hardware, or put it on, you know, hard storage and make sure and tuck it away somewhere and let it sit for 10 years, right? And, you know, the problem with worm storage is that, you know, one, it's expensive, right? Two, it's slow to access the data. And three, you know, you have these complicated destruction policies and cataloging policies you need to maintain. Software-based immutability, which we provide in Exchange, is just faster, it's easier to maintain, it's easier to access, and you know, most of you are aware of the fact that we have this sort of deep layer of storage in the recoverable items store to ensure that data is not tampered with once you place it on hold, once you place the user of the mailbox on hold. Okay. But what we provide in this release of Exchange is sort of taking that a step further, right? We're going to provide you much more granularity in terms of how you're able to manage these holds and how you're able to run queries on data and to be able to provide evidence in a litigation request. Now, in terms of data governance, this is really our MRM story in 2010, involved into 2013. Okay, you know, we provide basically tools that allow our customers to manage the life cycle of data in order to respond to legal, regulatory, compliance requirements for their organizations. And we provide a lot of transparency to the end users as well, so they understand sort of that the requirements around life cycle of data for their organization. And that's important because a lot of third-party archiving providers do not have access to Outlook and OWA the way we do, and do not have the ability to necessarily educate end users on that, on those policies, without having to provide a complicated add-in or some sort of third-party software that you don't necessarily want to deploy. So you know, data governance is obviously something that will allow you to reduce liability in your organization and manage risk, and that's very, very important. And then finally, e-discovery, and all of you are aware of the importance of e-discovery. This is compliance, right? This is your compliance officers or your legal folks having to find evidence, but not finding all the evidence that was ever generated, you know, for your organization, right? That's too much data. And you never want to present too much data to opposing counsel, right? It's expensive, and it's not a good way to win a case, right? So what we're trying to provide in 2013 is the query-based, time-based granularity to provide just the amount of data that you are required to present in a very fast turnaround. Right, to be able to do that so that you're saving money, you're not building up lawyer fees, and you're able to actually do that fairly easily. And not just you do it, right? Not just IT administrators having to do this, but you being able to delegate this task to specialist users through role-based access control. Okay? All right. So let's take a look at the lay of the landscape for archiving, and this actually covers some of the new stuff we're introducing in 2013. And you can see, some of you have probably seen this already if you've come to previous tech eds and you've seen previous Exchange presenters for 2010 archiving. The model's the same. We have the preserve and search. Those are really the two workflows we feel are just core to compliance scenarios for organizations. Now, within these workflows, you have, obviously, the buckets that I talked about in the last slide. And let's actually look at specifics now. So in-place archive, all of you are familiar with this, so I don't need to talk too much about it. But I do want to spend some time, and I'll do it on the next slide, on sort of our philosophy behind in-place archive. Because we get a lot of questions around, you know, why is your archive not offline? You know, do you have dedupe and single-instance storage and all this stuff? And I will talk about that. I'll address that. But really, the in-place archive, the primary purpose of it is, one, storage extensibility for the admin, Okay, being able to create this paradigm of hot and cold storage, be able to facilitate hybrid scenarios where you want on-premises mailboxes and your archive in the cloud, things like that. You know, that's really where the archive comes in. And with large mailboxes and the exchange, investments in making sure and improvements in I/O and making sure that you can use cheaper storage to hold your exchange data, it's perfect for applying to the archive, because what we're trying to instill in our customers' minds is the archive is cold data. Okay, that's where data you don't need to access, your end users don't really need to access, but you need to maintain for e-discovery purposes, right? And so you can keep it on cheaper storage. You can provide large mailboxes in the archive, and we follow that same principle, right? It's not like we expound upon it and then we don't do it ourselves. With Office 365. With the Exchange Online Plan 2, we provide what we call unlimited storage to the Exchange Plan 2 customers and the E3, E4 customers in Office 365. It starts with a default 100 gig mailbox, right? That's a lot of storage. So we definitely follow our principles. When we say we do it, we also do it in our own data centers. Now, in terms of the end user experience, it's like basically a PST, managing a PST. You know, end users mostly know how to do that, and we've made that sort of user experience comparable so the end users don't have to relearn how to access data. In fact, I'll show you later, we've actually made that experience even more seamless for end users. And that way, they are more efficient, and they make your lives a lot easier, right? So in-place archive is still managed through EAC and PowerShell, and obviously available on-prem online, or through Exchange Online Archiving, which is our cloud-based archive that's available for our on-premises customers who don't want to host their archive data on-premises, right? They basically, and that's great, because that's also a potential path to get to the cloud, right? A lot of our customers say, we're not yet comfortable moving all of our mailboxes to the cloud, but we are comfortable moving our archive data to the cloud. And that'll be a first step to maybe migration, you know, full migration into the cloud, kind of dipping the toe in the water, so to speak. So I'll talk more about that in a second, and you'll see the presentation, it gets sorted into these buckets, and I'll have a few demos as well, so don't worry, I'm not going to be talking the whole time. I know you want to see live products, so I'm definitely aware of that. In terms of governance, this is, you know, where we have our retention policies. Now we have very clear archive and delete policies that can be managed by the end user from the client, right? Or it can be applied at a global or organizational level by the administrator. Or the administrator can provide a menu of policies that the end user can choose when they're applying them to their emails or to conversations or to folders. Okay? You can even set these archive and delete policies for system folders, like the inbox or the sent folder, sent items folder, things like that. So there's just a lot of options, a lot of granularity in terms of how both end users and admins can manage the lifecycle of data through these retention policies. Okay, and the one thing is the one other thing I should point out is, and I'll show you this in a screenshot later, is the fact that the expiry date is shown on an email. There was a lot of our other archiving products are not able to do that. Once again, they don't have the integration with Outlook, for example. To be able to say, you know, to the end user, this item, this email is going to expire in 2 years and 3 days or something like that. But we are able to do that because of our integration with the client. And that way, end users aren't taken by surprise, because some of you who might have other archiving products in place probably are aware that, in some cases, end users will not be aware when an email expires from their inbox and it just suddenly goes away. Right, and so having that transparency, I think, is something that really adds value. Something that we're pretty proud to be able to offer. Okay, and then hold. This is the immutability story, right? It's the litigation hold, legal hold, as was referred to in 2010. We're really trying to emphasize the in-place nature of this, right? In-place hold. Apply an immutable hold to data in place. Leave that data in Exchange and apply the hold there. And that's really what we're trying to emphasize in this release. You'll see the term in place a lot. In place archiving, in place hold, in place e-discovery, right? You don't need to move that data out. Keep it in place. Keep it where it belongs. Preempt any, migration disasters or losing that data or the cost associated with that by just letting the data sit where it should. And we will provide all the tools that allows you to export it and do whatever you need to do to extend workflows beyond just Exchange. But the other aspect of 2013 hold, in place hold, is that we are now offering the ability to run query-based holds and time-based holds. Now, time-based holds is not new. Some of you have used rolling legal holds in 2010. But with time-based holds and query-based holds, you can really drill down, distill down a large set of data into just the data you need. And you're not limited to a flat list of queries against a single mailbox or a single user. Now you can have multiple users placed on hold. So you can have the same user placed on hold for multiple cases and multiple queries. Okay, so now we have three dimensions to the ability to discover data and to place hold on data, and the granularity with which you can do so. And I'll show you more about this later. This is kind of just giving you a little bit of a preview of what we're going to cover. Finally, e-discovery. Once again, I mentioned this earlier. Now we have federated e-discovery across Exchange, Link, and SharePoint from the same interface. That's a big investment we've made, and we really work closely across the suite with Link and SharePoint to make sure that this scenario works for our customers. So that's huge. You can leave the data there, and not only that, because the data is in its native store, we can provide you live, in-place previews of that data when you run the discovery search. So you don't have to make copies of it to a separate folder or anything like that. It saves you a lot of time. It saves you workflow. It saves you probably money on storage, things like that. So there's a lot of advantages to having the in-place data and to be able to provide in-place previews. And then, of course, if you need to export it, we'll provide you the full sort of export capabilities. And I'll dive into that as well. Role-based access control, still here. You can determine, you have full control over who gets access to hold and e-discovery capabilities, right? If it's a compliance officer or somebody else who you've determined should get access to this data, that's all the same. It works the same as in 2010. And of course, auditing. Most of the auditing controls are the same as well. All right. Let's dive a little deeper. So, benefits of in-place archiving. Couple things. One is in 2010. We introduced the archive primarily to get rid of that PST problem, which all of you, I'm sure, are familiar with three times over. PSTs were impossible to manage, right? They're on laptops. They're at employees' homes. They're not centrally managed. If you have a litigation request, you need to present evidence. Then if it's in that PST file that's lost somewhere, you're not going to be able to get to it. Not only that, they get corrupted easily, and users, can't access them, and then it's a headache for IT administrators. So PSTs were just bad all around. But they were necessary to some degree because end users were so accustomed to using it. That was the user experience that most end users were familiar with. Well, what we did with archiving was basically said, look, let's maintain that user experience so that the archive appears just as a secondary node to the primary mailbox, and you can do all the things you do with a primary mailbox on an archive, right? You can categorize, you can set flags, you can, create folders, you can do whatever you want. And that way the experience is not disjointed for the end user. They're still able to be productive, and they don't need to learn a new interface, and they don't need to worry about, a separate interface to access their archived data. It's right there in the same interface, in Outlook and OWA. Now, I want to talk about this large mailbox concept, because this is important. Now, sometimes we get questions around, okay, why don't you have an offline archive, for example? And it's important for everyone to understand that what we're doing with Exchange is not mapping primary and archive to online and offline, all right? Or to not mapping primary and archive to compliance and not compliance, okay? We provide compliance capabilities, legal hold and e-discovery, not just on the archive, right? We provide it, as you all know, on a primary mailbox as well. So you don't need to move something to the archive to be able to run a search on it. You don't need to move something to the archive in order to place hold. You can do that on data that's in primary mailboxes, right? We provide you the tools to run compliance across all the data in Exchange, not just the ones in the archive. As such, there isn't really this mapping, once again, of compliance versus non-compliance, right? There is a mapping, though, of hot data and cold data. And there is a mapping of where you might want to put the data on expensive storage versus cheaper storage. And really, that's the type of paradigm shift we're trying to facilitate here. So, if somebody wants to access their archive offline, we would say, well, maybe the data that they're trying to access should actually be in their primary mailbox, because we do provide large mailboxes and OST improvements, and so the performance doesn't get degraded. And so, you know, if that's something that they need, that information, maybe that should be in the primary mailbox. Because the archive is really the cold storage. That's the stuff that the end user doesn't need anymore. That's the stuff that you could age out and not you know, create extra risks by having too much data. Right? That's stuff that you can age out. But it should be there, because you need to run e-discovery requests in the back end away from the user's view. Right? So it's another way to think about how we're dealing with sort of, you know, what the industry has defined as archiving and compliance, and what we provide in terms of tools to help our customers save money and to save time. The other thing is we get a lot of questions around dedupe, SIS, right, things like that. And once again, large mailboxes, cheap storage, items in the archive. To be consistent with our story, you know, you don't really need dedupe and SIS, right? Now, we understand that some customers, depending on what their deployment is, depending on what type of hardware they've already invested in, they might require it. So we're certainly not saying that this necessarily is the end-all solution for every customer. You know, certainly, it depends on the environment you're in and the circumstances you're under. But I think in general, what we're trying to say is, hey, look, we are investing in large mailboxes and cheaper storage in order to facilitate this archiving story. And that way, you know, people understand that, you know, there is a little bit of a shift in terms of how, you know, we're seeing this evolving. Okay. All right. Sure, yep. Yep.
You mentioned there email access to all clients.
Yep.
Does it mean Outlook 2011?
So question is, access to all clients, does that mean Outlook 2011? It does mean the new Outlook, yes.
I mean, currently in Exchange 710 archiving,
yep.
Outlook 2011 cannot see.
Are you talking about Outlook 2011 for Mac?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. That's a good question. So the question is, will this be available in Outlook 2011 for Mac? And, yep. Right. Yeah. So the question is, is this going to be available for Mac, Outlook for Mac 2011? That's still to be determined. What the work that's going to be put in that. Something we're considering, but I can't say conclusively at this point whether it will be available. Okay. All right. So in terms of the experience itself, I just want to show you sort of what this looks like. You've got the archive, both in Outlook and Outlook Web App. You see it's just an additional node right within the primary. Right. The experience is very similar, and the way end users interact with the data is going to be consistent. Right, and that's really important. This saves them time. It saves you time from having to educate them and from having to show them how to use it. Right, this is once again a huge advantage, you know, for Exchange having the integration points with Outlook and OWA. And remember, you can do everything that you can do with a primary on this archive data. Right, I mentioned it before, but you know, all of the actions that an user can take on their archive data, they can take with their primary in the same way. Okay. So you can retain the folder hierarchy. This is an important new improvement we've made in 2013. Now that Exchange and SharePoint are both on Fast, how many of you are familiar with Fast Search, the search technology? Okay, about half the room. So basically, Fast was this new search technology that was acquired by SharePoint, and we've now federated the Fast Search across Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. So there's a consistency in terms of the performance and in terms of the user experience of the search across all of the products in the suite. And one of the improvements for Exchange specifically is that now you can run a search across your primary and archive data as an end user all in one place. Right? Before, you had to run a search separately from those two stores. Now you can run it all in one place. And not only that, when you get a result, it doesn't just lop it off and provide you two views, right, of that data. It actually merges the data, merges the view. So within a conversation, you'll actually have each of those items chronologically listed, regardless of whether they're in the primary or the archive. Okay, so this experience is now completely merged together, and thus end users no longer have this sort of disjointed experience accessing their primary versus their archive data. Okay, so that's something that we've improved upon in 2013. Search everywhere at once, integrated search. Okay, now for data governance. Transparent user experience. I've talked a lot about these, so I'm going to go through these slides pretty quickly. But, you know, once again, we tell the end user exactly when that that item, whether it's it's an email or what, will expire. And that way there's no surprises. And, you know, you can set an archive and a delete policy on the same item, right? The assumption is the delete policy comes after the archive policy. So the archive policy moves it to the archive, and then after that, the delete policy takes no effect. When you move an item into the archive, the hierarchy gets retained from the primary. Okay, so once again, if you set archive policies, what they get, what the end user gets in terms of a view, in terms of folder structure, things like that, it gets retained. Okay? So there they are, retention policy and expiry details right there at the header of the email. Granular retention, you can see here, archive policies, retention policies are delete policies, and they get, it's just much clearer now in terms of how you can manage them, how you can choose them. The UI is sort of integrated with the new sort of fluid OWA UI. And, you know, this is an instance where you just give your end users the control that they need, or you can manage it all yourself, right? You can provide this list, this menu of policies as an administrator, or you can force policies globally across your organization. Okay, and this is sort of the admin view of the retention policies. Once again, it's important, right, to manage the lifecycle of your data. You do not want to keep data forever. And I'm sure most of you already know that, but you'd be surprised. A lot of customers want to keep data for as long as they can. And all that does is it exposes you to just more risk, right? Only keep data that you need to keep for as long as you need to keep it. And that's why we've now provided self-serve time-based legal hold capabilities. And that's why e-discovery now, you have time elements to the queries. It's just important to be able to narrow down your results to only the subset of data that you need. Okay? All right. Administration. It's simple. It should be straightforward. Right? You can easily manage archive straight from the EAC. How many of you are familiar with the EAC, Exchange Administration Center? Okay, not too many, actually. Okay, so what we've done in 2013 is we are providing one web-based management console that sort of rules all. Okay, in 2010, if you were in the cloud, you used the ECP, the Exchange Control Panel, in order to manage your organization. Also, your specialist users through RBAC would be able to do so through the ECP. But if you were on-premises, you also had managed with the EMC, right? And then if you had FOPI, you had a separate FOPI admin center. So you had a bunch of disparate administration interfaces that you needed to deal with if you were managing an organization in 2010. In 2013, we are providing just the EAC. The EAC includes most of the controls that you had available in the ECP and the FOPI admin center. And a good portion of what was in the EMC as well. Remote PowerShell is also still available, okay, for more advanced configurations. But for the EAC, you just manage all in one place the archiving, provisioning, and all that, and you can do so, across regardless of what shape your deployment takes, whether it's on-prem cloud or some hybrid, okay. All that management can be done from the EAC. So it's pretty straightforward. Okay, auditing, pretty similar to what you had before in 2010. You can audit, whoever's been configuring legal hold or in-place hold in your organization, audit for, delegates or non-mailbox owner access to mailboxes. You can also do auditing for configuration changes and also any RBAC permissioning that's been granted. So you can basically develop an audit trail for just about any scenario. Okay, this is new for 2013. I think this will be very interesting for a lot of you. So I mentioned earlier that we are now providing compliance capabilities across Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. Now, Exchange obviously has a store that we've built these compliance capabilities on top of through the EAC. And SharePoint does as well. But you might be asking yourself, where does link go, right? In 2010, you needed a relational database, maybe a SQL database, and you would have to move your link data out and into that data, into that separate database to run compliance on it. What we're doing in 2013 is actually configuring link to be able to archive to exchange in order to achieve immutability for link content. Okay? And this way, you only need to use the management tools you have for exchange in order to manage link. Okay? You don't have that third relational database that you need to manage. Once again, this just cuts down a lot of the overhead and a lot of the time spent having to manage and learn and authenticate against a new administration interface. Okay? Now, how does it work? Let me give you a scenario. So there's a user I'm gonna use myself, for example, so it's easier. So Steve. Steve is at Contoso, and his administrator has placed Steve on legal hold. Okay? So I've been placed on legal hold in my exchange environment. And I take part in a link meeting. And so I dial into the link meeting, and I'm, you know, sending IMs and drawing on the whiteboard and, you know, basically participating in the meeting. So what happens at that point is that Exchange and Link basically are sharing the same AD attributes across in terms of hold. And they both recognize, Link now recognizes that Exchange has basically placed me on hold. And what that then triggers is for Link to start generating a transcript of all the interactions that I'm having in that Link meeting. And what it does is once it's completed that, it automatically archives that transcript into my Exchange mailbox in Exchange. Okay? So now when you use the EAC to run e-discovery of Exchange data, you also have that Link data appearing within the results. Okay? So it's a simple, you know, all you do is set up an OAuth trust between Exchange and Link, and it's literally a Boolean check on the Link side that says integrate with Exchange, and boom. The auto-archiving happens. Anytime you place an Exchange user on hold, Link will recognize that and will make sure to preserve any data related to that particular user. Okay? So you can see that the transcript that gets created actually gets archived into the purges folder in the recoverable items area. And as you all probably aware, recoverable items, that's the immutable store for Exchange data. When you place a user's mail on hold, it stays in that recoverable items folder for perpetuity for as long as you've set that hold. Okay. All right. Now, in terms of support matrix, the only scenario that won't be supported is Exchange on-prem and Link online. Okay. But otherwise, and there's some additional configuration depending on what deployment scenario you are interested in, but it should be fairly straightforward. All right. In place hold. All right, and don't worry, we'll get to a demo soon. I know people are probably itching for seeing some live product. So I'll talk through the hold stuff, and then we'll do a demo. So with in-place hold, we've come along a journey, right? In 2010, we provided litigation hold, or we called it legal hold, and you could place a hold on a mailbox for a user. You can, and you place that hold forever, you know, for a perpetuity, or you can run a rolling legal hold, which was a time-based legal hold. But that's it. You know, you had to save every piece of email related to that mailbox for that period of time. And that's, you know, a lot of mail potentially. Now, in Office 365, obviously we provided the rolling legal hold capabilities, and not only that, we provided self-service rolling legal hold. So now we're kind of introducing this idea of, okay, let our admins set the time period that's needed to preserve data. And then that way you have a lot more control and granularity in terms of what data you're keeping. Now in the new Exchange, we have this concept of in-place hold, and it's more than just keeping, you know, a hold on a mailbox for data forever, or even for a period of time. Now you can do it based on a query. And we use KQL, which provides you with proximity search. So you can actually, for those who are not aware of proximity search, you can say, hold any item that contains the word tech within 30 words of ready, or tech within 30 words of ed. And that way, it will be smart enough. There's some intelligence there to be able to determine any items that actually follow that formula. So just much more granularity and much closer to what many customers have become accustomed to terming case management, right, in a compliance solution. We're now providing that with Exchange Archiving Compliance. All right. So there's in terms of the concept of hold, there's really three main aspects. One is, what are the sources that you need to place on hold or that you need to run queries against? The sources could come from Exchange, right? So Exchange mailboxes, for example, that's pretty straightforward. It could come from SharePoint, right? So you can actually use a SharePoint site as a source. Or it could come from file shares, right? If it's fast enabled, you can actually set up a file server and plug that in as well. Remember, linked data auto archives to Exchange, so you have linked data as part of that source. Okay. So the first aspect is, okay, what are the sources? You know, if you know that there are certain individuals within your organization who may be under investigation, then you should probably place those individuals and their SharePoint sites and their mailboxes on hold, right? And you can start by casting a wide net, and then you can use the tools for doing KQL searches and things like that to narrow that sort of body, that corpus of data, down to what you need. The second aspect is time. How long do you need to hold this data for? And then the third aspect, of course, is what specifically do you need to hold within those sources? Okay? So no longer do you have to hold everything related to these individuals, right? You can actually identify the sources, run the query, and then do the hold. And that way you're only placing a hold on data related to a particular case or a particular event that belongs to these particular users and sites. Now, you might be asking yourself, where do we do this, right? Do we do this in the Exchange Administration Center? The question is yes. Do we not do it in the Exchange Administration Center? The question is also yes. Okay, there's two places that you're going to be able to run what we're calling sort of a federated e-discovery and hold. Okay, if you do not have SharePoint, if you only have Exchange, you can do all of the sort of query-based hold and sort of event, you know, export options and things like that through the Exchange Administration Center. Okay, so if you don't have SharePoint, that's fine. You can just do it through the EAC. Remember, the EAC is that web-based console in 2013. And if you have Link, you can get the Link data there as well, as I explained earlier. Now, if you have the full suite, if you have SharePoint in addition to Exchange and Link, then you don't have to use the EAC, because the EAC won't get you the SharePoint data. Okay, it won't allow you to pick SharePoint sources. You will be using the eDiscovery Center, which is actually part of SharePoint. Okay, and with the eDiscovery Center, you'll be able to choose SharePoint sources as well. And that way you now have federated compliance across Exchange, Link, and SharePoint just from the eDiscovery Center. Okay, so it's one or the other. I'm not saying you need to have both of these administrative interfaces. It's one or the other, depending on whether or not you need Exchange by itself or whether or not you need Exchange, Link, and SharePoint across the stack. Last thing I'll say about this is obviously you have all of your own administrative tasks that you have to manage, but certainly you can delegate compliance role to specialist users within your organization. And the permissions the permission model used for the eDiscovery Center is the same that you would get in SharePoint, right? So you can actually control the permissions of who can access that, who gets specialist privileges to be able to run federated eDiscovery across all three products. All right. Okay. So in terms of hold, the last thing I want to talk about with hold before we jump into a demo is just going back to the idea of, you know, worm storage and, you know, using hard storage for immutability purposes. Really, you know, there's just so many more advantages to having software-based storage. And certainly, we recognize some customers need to be able to back up the archive data offsite, things like that. And so that's why we have database availability groups for on-premises, so you can actually configure that. And also, obviously, in the data center, we do that by default. Okay, so, you know, the biggest thing for us is to try to, you know, alleviate as much of your concerns around, you know, whether or not Exchange archiving can actually achieve immutability, because we're very bullish now about this. We won't necessarily say we'll achieve compliance, right? We provide you tools to achieve compliance, but certainly it's up to the administrator to deploy it correctly and to be able to, you know, conform the tools that we provide to the industries and the regulations that they have to meet. And every industry and regulation is so different. But we do say, we will tell you that, yeah, you can achieve immutability with Exchange archiving. All right, let's jump into a demo. All right. Okay. All right, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to create a case. Now, this is a new concept in Exchange 2013, is the idea of being able to create a case. Okay. Remember, we're no longer doing a flat list of holds, right? This is now query-based holds, and you can do it across three dimensions. So you can actually, you know, have one user saved across multiple cases and multiple queries. So let's go ahead and go to the eDiscovery Center. This is the eDiscovery Center, and this is where you can create a new case in SharePoint. And let's go ahead and call this Northwind 100. Okay. Now you've got the URL name of the website, so it's creating a SharePoint site for you. You can build it off of a template, a particular template. You can actually create granular set of permissions for this case. Now keep in mind, this is a case. You know, for, and we're mapping it to any type of legal case that you can have, right? I mean, we did some research and found, and the studies were done that stated that the average corporation had tens to hundreds of litigation cases, dealt with tens of hundreds of litigation cases per year, and each litigation case generally involved, on average, 100 gigs of data, and cost $1 million per case. Okay. So you can imagine how expensive and how time-consuming it is to sift through all that data and to be paying lawyers by the hour to have to, you know, review that data and present evidence. And it's just a lot of work, right? So what if we could provide you tools that made it easier for you to manage these cases and made it so that you only have to present the data you need to present and nothing more, right? That's really where your cost savings and your time savings are going to come from. So the more granularity we can provide, the better. Right? And once again, don't get me wrong, there are third-party archiving vendors out there who are really good. They have really good products that have been in the market for a while, and they provide a lot of these same case management capabilities. Remember, the one difference, though, is with Exchange, we have the federation that allows the data to be in place, right? Which just naturally will save you in workflow. And secondly, the user experience is going to be more seamless with these products just because they're integrated with Outlook and OWA, right? At the end of the day, it's still a choice, right? And at the end of the day, you know what compliance solution will work best for your organization, for your specific needs. But I guess what I can say is that our compliance story has really taken a big leap in 2013. I think a lot more customers will see that there's a lot more value in what we're providing now, even beyond what we had in 2010. All right, so let's go ahead and create this. And we'll let it create. Take a little while. Once we've created a case, now we have the sort of the full gauntlet in terms of assigning sources and placing sources on hold, and then running queries, and then saving those queries for future reference. Okay, so we've created this case called Northwind 100, and I have really two areas of this page that I'm going to really focus on. This is the discovery sets, and there's the queries themselves. Okay, I'll start with a discovery set. I'm going to create a new discovery set. Okay. And all a discovery set is, you know, identifying the sources, pinning down a subset of that information, whether it's all of it or whether it's running a query to distill it down to a subset, and then placing it on hold. So this is the scenario whereby, you know what you need to place on hold. You don't necessarily know what specific evidence you need to place on hold within those sources, but you know what sources you need to place on hold. So this is a scenario whereby you can do that. And I'll show you sort of how this workflow occurs. So you've got discovery set name. I'm going to call this Northwind 100. And let's get some sources here. So I'm going to add sources. So let's add KDJ. Oops. Okay. And then let's add LXD as well. All right. And then in terms of locations, what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a case site. Let's do this. I'm going to copy this. And I'm going to paste this in here. It's Northwind. Okay, so now I have a SharePoint site as well. I think I'm going to stop there. So now it's going to use these two mailboxes and that SharePoint site as sources. And you can see that it actually provides some statistics right there. Right there in your administrative view of how many items, what size, come from those particular sources. Okay? And this is pretty valuable because you can determine, oh, this is a lot of data. Maybe there's like 6 megs is not too bad, right? But let's say there's like a terabyte of data there. Okay, well, maybe you don't want to be holding all of that data. Maybe it makes sense to distill it down, right? But, oh, 6 megs, that's not bad, so I'll just place a hold on that. So, you know, you can do that, right? Or you can filter it down, right? So if that really was a terabyte of data, I don't want to place a hold on all of that. So what I would do is I would filter it down. So let's show you the KQL if I can. Let's see. Do I have it up here? All right. I'm not going to memorize this KQL, so I'm going to copy it. And then paste that. Okay, I'll leave the time open. You can actually specify drill down to author and sender as well as domain, but I'm just going to apply this KQL filter. And you can see the results changed, right? I have less results than I had before because it ran this filter. And the filter means look for any item that has the word Northwind within 10 words of traders, okay? So that allows me to find, you know, drill that data set down, something more manageable and something that I'm more comfortable placing on hold. Okay, so now what I do is I come down here, and I can enable in place hold. I can preview the results. Okay, so I can say, okay, I've got some results here in Exchange. You know, if you click on these, it'll actually take you to the live data. I also have it in SharePoint, same thing. Okay, and remember, this is live in place results. You haven't copied these somewhere to access them, right? You're actually looking at the results, the previews, straight from the store itself. Okay, that's the advantage of in place. And then if you go ahead and save it, and then it will create this particular discovery set as part of this case. Keep in mind, I'm not limited to just creating this discovery set. I can create as many as I want with as many queries and as many sources as I want in however configuration I need, I think is important. Okay, so there's just a lot of more flexibility and control in terms of how you're managing your data across eDiscovery and in place hold. And using cases is sort of a conceptual model that seems to make sense in a lot of the industries where this is important. Okay. All right, let's switch back really quickly. Okay. And I think I have about 20 minutes, so I think I've got plenty of time. It's good. All right, so now let's go to in-place eDiscovery. I will talk quickly about eDiscovery. We'll do another demo, and then we'll open it up for questions. Okay. All right. So let's do an overview of how the e-discovery process works, okay? So the first thing is to identify and preserve, right? What that means is what are the sources that you should be preserving in order to ensure that you are not going to lose data that might be requested for a litigation case or an evidence in a case that you need to present to opposing counsel, right? If you know what those sources are, you want to place those sources on hold first, right? Cast as wide a net as possible. And then once you figure out, okay, what specific pieces of data within those sources you need to actually hold, you can do that. Or you need to present, you can do that, okay? So, you know, there is a workflow here where you start with a large volume of data. You might place the whole thing on hold, or if you can distill it down, you can distill it down. But then from there, what you're going to do is run queries against it. Run queries for specific, you know, keywords, for proximity matches that are relevant to that case. Okay? And remember, you can, once you've kept that source on hold, they're on hold. You still got that there. But you can actually run three or four different cases and different queries at the same time against those sources. Okay? Because that's important. Because once you distill that data, that big corpus of data, down to what you need to present, then you're in a position to say, okay, give this to the legal team. Let them present this to opposing counsel. But at that point, the volume of data has gone down and the relevance of data has gone up. Right? That'll cut down on the time spent trying to figure out what should be reviewed, and also on the cost of doing that. Okay? So this is how we envision this. Remember, the workflow can work the other way as well. If you don't see an urgency around placing all of your sources on hold, you can run the e-discovery query first. Right? If you know exactly what words you're looking for or what proximity matches you're looking for, run that query first. And then once you've done that, then you place it on hold. And that way you don't have to, you know, cast that wide net. You don't have to, you know, hold everything related to all these sources. You can just hold what that little sliver that's actually necessary for your case. Okay? So there's a lot of flexibility in terms of how you manage this and how it works. Now, with e-discovery, the real benefits here are, one, we're allowing you to do this from one interface. Okay? Manage all of your Exchange, SharePoint, Link data from one interface. Two, we're not disrupting the user experience. Okay? The user experience is seamless. You saw that the archive shows up just the way it is. Retention policies and archive policies are there. That aging process is transparent to the end user. And all of the legal holding discovery is done in the background. Okay? There's no stubbing. There's no other user interface that the user needs to access in order to be able to find their data in this separate store. None of that, right? It's right there within their native experience in Outlook and OWA. Okay? That's important. And of course, the third thing is case management, right? We've given you now many more tools to be able to distill this down to what you need. Only the information that you need and nothing more. Okay? And you've seen the KQL queries, you've seen the statistics, and the statistics can get actually quite granular, and I'll show you in a minute. All right. So let's switch back to the demo. Okay. So let's take a look at a query now. I'm going to go ahead and open this up. Now, this is a page that allows you to run e-discovery, okay? Federated e-discovery with all of the data in place. I'm going to go ahead and give it a name. So let's do Northwind 100. And then the query, let's go ahead and leave this blank for now. Now, the sources are already pre-populated based on the discovery set I created earlier, right? So what I'm going to do is show you Exchange and SharePoint. These are the preview. This is the preview of the results from the previous discovery set. I can filter this down further. But the good thing about this is that you've got Exchange data. Remember, link data shows up here as well, right? And if you hover over it, you actually get a preview as it is. You don't even have to click on it to get a preview of what that item looks like. Okay? So that's really convenient. So, you know, and in SharePoint, same thing. You get that preview. Okay? And then if I open it on SharePoint, it'll open it, you know, using the rich client or the web app, depending on what you have available. And you're opening that data live in the server, right? This is not copying it to another folder or anything like that. Okay. All right. Now, yes, question. Right, yeah, if you have the compliance role, the administrative role, yeah, then you get access to this. And remember, you can determine who gets that compliance role. And the compliance role means that you get e-discovery and legal hold, and it should federate into the e-discovery center. Okay? So would site admin then be able to remove that off their site? Yeah. The site admin, to be able to remove this. Yeah, but if they remove it, it'll still get preserved. Right? If they're on hold already, then yeah. Yeah, but not viewable, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Unless they give themselves that permission, right? All right, so you have what's called refiners, okay? Refiners actually allow you to distill this down even further. So if I apply a refiner for PowerPoint, it'll actually condense that list down to just PowerPoint documents, okay? And then when I clear, it goes back. Okay? So, you know, it's really useful. You've got your eDiscovery query. You've got the results. You can preview the results. You don't have to wait for those results to get copied to a separate folder in order to review them. You can see them right here. And that way you can figure out what exactly you need to export out. And then once you've determined that, now you can actually go to export. And we'll give it a little bit of time. And now you have some options for export. Okay? Now, you can remove duplicate exchange content, so you can dedupe exchange content, recognizing that if an email gets sent to a lot of people, that email gets, the instance of that email gets, you know, there are multiple instances, and we can dedupe that when we export the data. You can remove IRM if you have rights management. If you have RMS integration and you have IRM protection, you can remove that. As far as I know, we can't decrypt other forms of encryption for obvious reasons, but with IRM, you can do that. You can include versions of SharePoint documents. So if there are 10 versions of a document, SharePoint document that was edited so many times, you can save all those versions together. And you can include encrypted items or ones with unrecognized formats, but you won't necessarily be able to decrypt them, right? But you can include those items in the export folder. And then what you do is, if you go ahead and click OK, it's going to now give me the option of exporting. And we'll give it a little bit of time. And what I'm going to do, I can either download a report. So what's the report? This is the report is basically a manifest that you know, that you can, it'll provide you a summary of everything that happened, all of the items that you were able to come across in that eDiscovery search, as well as, you know, who accessed it, who ran the search, what time, so a lot of information for auditing purposes. You also get access to a manifest, an EDR manifest, that allows workflows, third-party workflows, to then be able to use that data to kick off other types of work streams. Okay, so there's a good extensibility story here. You can use this data to then plug into third parties' products as well. Let's go ahead and download the results, and we'll give it a little bit of time. So let's go ahead and click OK. And you know, even if you have network latency problems, it should still continue, right? It might stop. There might be little hiccups, but it won't start from the beginning. It'll actually continue. And we'll let that run for a little bit. It shouldn't take too long. There you go. And what it'll do is it'll actually create a folder on wherever you indicate you want that folder to be created. I indicate it on the desktop. And that folder will include exchange items in PST format. It'll include SharePoint items, like, for example, websites, wikis, and blogs show up in MHT format. And then, of course, it also includes social media, communities, things like that for SharePoint, and those are in CSV format. Okay, so you have all those things there in a digestible format. It also includes that report I told you about, as well as the manifest, to be able to kick off third-party workflows. So you get a lot of stuff when you export. Okay. What's the size of the, sorry?
Size limit on the
DST. Oh, size of the limit. Oh, good question. Let me get back to you on that. I don't know the size of that. I'd assume there isn't too much of a limitation, but we'll, I know there could be a lot of items, right? I'd assume that the, whatever the, you know, export. Right. I'm pretty sure we've increased it beyond 2 gigs. I just don't know the exact limit. Yeah. So.
Is there a log that indicates what the auditors are searching for?
Yes.
The check.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's an auditing log for who's doing the e-discovery quest, who's placing legal hold, things like that. Yeah. Okay. All right. Looks like it's done. So let's go ahead and close this. And there it is. There's a folder. You've got the exchange items. You've got the SharePoint items. You've got the reports. Any errors? You know, what were the results? things like that. And then, of course, you've got the manifest. Right? And the manifest is in an XML format. So there's a lot of stuff here, right? And remember, hopefully to address the problem of limitation in terms of how much data you can actually export out is the fact that you would have narrowed that query down to only what you need. Okay, so yeah, I'm not sure what the limit, I'm pretty sure it's more than what it was in 2010. And it's something that's still TBD also, because obviously we haven't yet gone to market. This is only in preview. But yeah, hopefully you will not need to export large amounts of data because we provide the granularity for you to do it, to distill it down to what you need. All right, let's go ahead and switch back. Got just a couple more slides, and then we can go to questions. So in-place eDiscovery, the eDiscovery Center in SharePoint. Right? You've got federated eDiscovery and holds across Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. You have case management capabilities. You now have in-place hold that allows you to have in-place previews. Right? You don't need to copy data into a separate folder or a separate location in order to access that data. You've got the ability to export, including deduplication, versioning, things like that, IRM, you know, breaking IRM. And then, of course, you've got the actual query-based holds, which includes KQL, proximity search, fuzzy search, things like that. And then the refiners as well, right? You can distill down to extension types. All these sessions are done now, I think, since this is the last day of the conference. But I will be around for the next hour in the speaker lounge. So if anyone has any deeper questions they want to ask, or if they want to give me feedback that I can bring back to my engineering team, happy to do that. Evals are really important. It helps us to improve. So really appreciate it if all of you could spend a little bit of time in providing some feedback. And, well, I won't. They want us to still show the slide, so I'll show it. Tech Ed Resources, go to that link. Have you guys seen the PPI board in the big touchscreen thing in the office division? Pretty cool, right? Yeah, we brought that over. So get a chance, take a look at it. We actually acquired that company, so actually that technology is actually part of the office division now. How we actually sell it or whatever, that's still to be determined. But and T-shirts, you can get T-shirts. All right. Okay, good. So any other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks.